All right. Good morning. Thank you for coming. And what I'd like to talk to you about today are some thermodynamic analysis we've been performing in a couple of different systems we've been looking at and natural sediments. One is that we're looking at methanogenesis occurring in some rice paddies in the Central Valley of California. And then in another system, we're looking at arsenic release in some sediments in Cambodia. And both of these processes are highly dependent on basically reductive reactions. And so under anaerobic transitions, we get reducing reactions. And so in this case, we have an oxisol rich in iron oxyhydroxides transitioning, or we can imagine it transitioning to more glade soil and being very reduced over time if it's waterlogged. And so under these kind of conditions, reducing reactions transpire, and these control the fate of contaminants. Reducing conditions will mobilize arsenic, for example, but immobilize or potentially immobilize uranium. Reducing reactions have a profound impact on nutrient cycling, and also trace gas emissions from soils and sediments. And another thing reducing reactions have a lot of control over, biogeochemical reactions have a lot of control over, are the fate of carbon in systems. And so the rate of carbon oxidation in soil, for example, will be differential based on what terminal electron acceptors are present. And these reactions have thought to usually transpire according to where they stand on the kind of the traditional electron tower. And so what we see here are the standard state electrical couples. And when coupled to, say, organic carbon oxidation, the couples at the highest end of the tower are thought to transpire first because they provide the highest energy yield to whatever microorganisms are driving the reaction. And so what we typically would see in a soil and sediment is a depletion of oxygen, nitrate, and so on and so forth as we go down the electron tower. And this can happen either along a redox gradient or in one space over time as conditions go anaerobic or go reducing. We might also see this in a sediment profile. And so we can imagine overlying infiltrating waters from a lake or a marine sediment or water infiltrating into a soil, and we see the progressive depletion of electron acceptors and the appearance of reduced species. And so, as I mentioned before, what's really important is that carbon turnover is dependent on these reactions occurring. And so, for example, sulfate, if we use acetate as a model organic in a system, sulfate is going to contribute 8 electrons per mole of acetate occurring. Whereas with hematite, we have to reduce 4 moles of hematite to reduce the same amount of acetate. And so, in a sense, we get more bang for our buck with sulfate reduction in terms of what's limiting organic carbon oxidation in soils and sediments. However, unless we're in a brackish or saltwater environment, we may not see a lot of sulfate. And so iron reduction will impart a very profound control on reducing reactions, both in terms of the fate of carbon, the production of methane — I'll show you how this is related in a moment — and things like arsenic release in soils and sediments. And so the favorability of iron oxyhydroxide reduction, though, is going to depend very much on what form of iron 3 is available. And this is something that tends to be overlooked sometimes in literature, that we have a large suite of iron oxides often present in soil and sediments. We just don't have kind of quote-unquote Fe3. And so we can imagine ferrihydrite as being a first iron oxide that forms as iron 2 is solubilized or hydrolyzed under oxid conditions and oxidized. Ferrihydrite can transform to other things, such as goethite or hematite, both under oxic and anoxic conditions. And we can also get a large suite of other secondary iron phases that can form. And so what I'll show you is how the favorability of iron reduction can vary drastically depending on whether or not we have hematite, ferrihydrite, or goethite in the system. And so on this graph, on the y-axis, we have the Gibbs free energy of reaction for either iron reduction, sulfate reduction, or methanogenesis. And on the x-axis here, we have iron 2 concentration. And what this is basically showing is non-standard state conditions and their impact on the favorability of iron reduction. So up here, we have ferrihydrite along this line. We can see as we increase iron 2 concentrations, the favorability of ferrihydrite decreases. And we get the same relationship with both goethite and hematite as well. What we see is that under field conditions, and the reason this transpires is iron 2 is a metabolite of this reaction. And as iron 2 increases in solution, the overall favorability of this reaction decreases. So what we see, these blocks represent the typical concentrations of iron 2 we might see in solution in the field. And what we see is that if we have goethite or hematite around, the favorability of iron reduction can approach or be actually less than sulfate reduction and methanogenesis. And so this is just a little bit more of a digestible format for what I just showed. Under some typical field conditions and with 10 micromolar iron 2 around, we see that ferrihydrite is by far the most energetically favorable reaction if we're considering iron reduction, sulfate reduction, and methanogenesis. But hematite is considerably less favorable, just marginally more so than sulfate reduction, and methanogenesis yields much less energy. However, if we look at conditions with 200 micromolar iron 2 around, we see that ferrihydrite is still pretty good in terms of yielding a lot of energy for microorganisms, but hematite reduction really tanks. It goes way down. In fact, it's much less favorable than sulfate reduction and actually a little less favorable than the calculated values for methanogenesis that may occur. And so what we see is that these mineralogical controls on iron can result in unexpected chemistry in the field. An example of this I'm giving an example of some simulations that we ran using a reactive transport code just under batch conditions where we add in multiple electron acceptors in the presence of acetate. And we let these reductive reactions transpire according to thermodynamic and kinetic constants that are present in the literature. And what we see is if basically we have reduction over time, for example, oxygen is quickly depleted in solution, we see the depletion of sulfate. And if we add iron 3 into these reactions and as ferrihydrite, what we see is this is such a favorable reaction, we get a lot of iron 2 building up in solution. Again, this is just like in a batch reactor system. And so what happens is so much iron 2 builds up that we can have the precipitation of secondary iron minerals, such as siderite. And this depresses the iron 2 concentrations below a point to where iron reduction remains favorable because we're removing metabolite. So iron 2 builds up in solution, but iron reduction remains very favorable. And therefore, iron reduction is utilizing most of the available electron pool that acetate is providing and as acetate is oxidized. However, if we add iron 3 in as goethite, we see a different relationship where since iron reduction is less favorable, we see less iron 2 reach near equilibrium conditions in solution. And no secondary phases are precipitating out. And we see then methane or methanogenesis take over. And so the implications are that, you know, even though we have iron oxides around, or we have terminal electron acceptors around that we think may inhibit more kind of reductive process such as methanogenesis, because we think they're getting more energy out of them based on the electron tower, that may not always be the case. Okay, and so now I'll go to talking about arsenic mobilization and some sediments in Cambodia. And in Cambodia, we see a very iron oxide-rich profile. And there's two major mechanisms in our system, at least, that may mobilize arsenic. One is iron reduction. And so this has been known for quite some time now, that the reductive dissolution of iron oxyhydroxides can mobilize arsenic. And another one is arsenic reduction. And so the reduction of arsenic 5 to arsenic 3 can mobilize arsenic as well, because arsenic 3 is a more mobile species. So the idea here is to perform a thermodynamic analysis on This is interesting. As a side note, I switched from PC to Mac, and this is what happens. Well, it should be deltas right there. And so we're going to perform a thermodynamic analysis on iron versus arsenic reduction and see which one is more favorable under the field conditions that we're looking at. And so we have reactions written out for arsenic reduction and iron reduction. And what we need to know are a couple things. One is, what's the solution chemistry like? We need to know how much, you know, what the pH is, for example, or how much soluble arsenic is there. And then we also need to know, importantly, what mineral arsenic or iron mineral phases are there. So going back to talking about the favorability of these different iron oxyhydroxides, we need to know what's there in order to actually make accurate predictions on how favorable iron reduction is. And so what we see in our sediment profile, if we go down 400 centimeters, is that we see a little bit of ferrihydrite at the top of our profile. And this makes sense because every year at our field site, we have incoming sediments. There might be a little ferrihydrite associated with that. And near the surface, we have fluctuating redox activity every year. And so we probably have iron being reduced and oxidized and hydrolyzed consistently, and so we get a little bit of ferrihydrite built up. But as we go down on the profile, and accordingly as we go down and with increasing sediment age, we see some other phases, some other iron oxyhydroxides. So we see some goethite as we go down in depth. And we also see kind of a flat line of hematite in the profile as well. As you remember, these are more the more crystalline, more thermodynamically stable phases. And we, as a side note, we were able to get this information by using a combination of techniques. So we use synchrotron X-ray diffraction, iron XAFs, as well as chemical extractions. We used all these in concert to come up with this profile. As we go farther down, we start to see some siderite in solution. This makes sense since our seasonal water table extent is somewhere between 100 and 200 centimeters. And so we start to see iron 2 carbonate drop out in solution. So that represents the significant sink of iron 2. So this is kind of a busy diagram, but I'll walk you through it. It's on the y-axis again, we have the Gibbs free energy of formation, of reaction for arsenic reduction right here, for iron reduction and sulfate reduction as well, just so you have kind of a benchmark as to where sulfate reduction stands. And these are basically written in terms of increasing iron 2 concentration on the x-axis down here, or increasing sulfate or arsenic concentration up here. So in the field, we see arsenic concentrations in this range. And that corresponds to energy yield for arsenic reduction between about negative 200 and 250 kilojoules per mole. So it's a pretty favorable reaction. We see iron 2 concentrations corresponding to where these blocks are. And so that little bit of ferrihydrite we see at the top of our profile looks like it's going to yield about as much energy release as arsenate reduction is. So we'd expect arsenate reduction and ferrihydrite reduction to occur concurrently, roughly concurrently, near the top of the profile. However, near the bottom of the profile, where we saw those more crystalline oxides, we expect arsenic reduction to be a much more favorable process. And so this is basically the same information, slightly more digestible form. These are all the reactions present again. So arsenate reduction, ferrihydrite reduction, under the field conditions we observe, but we just don't see much ferrihydrite. There's only a little bit near the top of our profile. And so what we expect is near the top of our profile again, ferrihydrite reduction, arsenate reduction to transpire. As we go farther down, more reduction of iron oxyhydroxides. And we confirmed this with some spectroscopy that were performed on the sediment. So this is X-ray fluorescent spectroscopy. Basically what we did is we took intact cores from multiple points in the sediment profile, and we spread sediments under anaerobic glove box on a piece of Kapton tape. And then we used an X-ray microprobe to raster across that tape and map out where the arsenic was in our sediment, what it was associated with, what minerals it was associated with, as well as iron. And then we could go into each spot like this, where we saw high arsenic concentrations, or even lower arsenic concentrations, perform spectroscopy on those points and figure out if we had arsenic 3 or arsenic 5. What we saw was that near the top of the profile, we saw mostly arsenic 5. Yeah, and so these were under dry field season conditions. So that's where we would expect arsenic reduction to start to transpire and iron reduction to start to transpire. As we went below that level, we saw a mix of arsenic 3 and arsenic 5, but mostly arsenic 3 in the profile. And then below 4 meters, we saw all arsenic 3. So we basically saw the same relationship that we predicted with our thermodynamic calculations transpiring in the sediment profile. So we saw a lot of arsenic reduction, but most of the iron present, or a lot of the iron present in the profile, was still as iron oxyhydroxides. It hadn't been reduced yet. So from a field site perspective, what we see is that near the top of the profile, we're getting arsenic reduction. And that's leading to some of the arsenic being solubilized and being mobilized. So in the sediments of Southeast Asia, at least at our field site, the first mobilization mechanism that kicks in is arsenic reduction. And that's happening along the groundwater flow path, as water, near where water is infiltrating in the sediments. So that's the first mechanism of arsenic mobilization that takes place. Secondly, as we go farther down in the profile, we see the slow reduction of iron oxyhydroxides, as evidenced by what we actually were able to extract with chemical extractions and look at with iron excess. And so this is really basically resulting in decreased sorption sites as a function of depth. And so that's the second mobilization mechanism that's kicking in. And so those two mobilization mechanisms acting in concert, one after the other, are resulting in arsenic contamination of the deeper groundwater at our field site. Okay, and so then our conclusions are that arsenic reduction is much more favorable than iron oxyhydroxide reduction at our field site. That's the first mobilization mechanism that kicks in. Iron oxide reduction then controls the transport and fate of arsenic. And that the redox tower basically is going to be rearranged quite differently under non-standard state conditions when we actually evaluate field site, our field conditions. For example, we can see methanogenesis occurring in the presence of iron oxyhydroxides. Okay, and with that, I'd like to thank our lab, Fendorf Lab, Guang Chao, he's our lab manager. Uli Mayer at UBC, who provided the reactive transport software that we use in some of our simulations. And Resource Development International is the NGO we worked with in Cambodia. That's it.